worse because I don't know who it is.
Good afternoon. I'm going to call to order the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology for June 22nd, 2017. Sean, what do we got going today?
Senator Riley, members of the committee, we have a pretty extensive informational meeting today. We have a variety of information security reports from the Office of the State Chief Information Officer, the Oregon Judicial Department, the Oregon State Legislature's Legislative Administration, the Secretary of State, the Oregon State Treasury, and the Department of Justice. Just a little bit of in the way of background before we call up our first speaker. In 2016, as certainly Senator Riley, you're aware, Senate Bill 1538 was passed into law. That law required notification of the Legislative Fiscal Office from various parties across all branches of government anytime there was an information security incident or anytime an information security assessment was completed. Along with those two notification requirements, there was also a requirement for an annual report from each of the parties I just mentioned to describe, provide an overview of their information systems and information resources over which each entity had supervisory control. With that said, our first presenter is the Office of the State CIO. We have the State Chief Information Officer, Dr. Pettit, and the State Chief Information Security Officer, Stephen Richards.
And welcome.
Gentlemen, if you could remember to introduce yourself for the record before you present.
So for the record, my name is Stephen Richards. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer of the State of Oregon.
And I'm Alex Pettit. I'm the Chief Information Officer.
I think Alex has got me leading this. First time we're doing it. And I know we got a very short time, so I'm going to try to keep to 15 minutes. I would point out that we did submit written testimony. So if I seem overly fast and brief, we did submit more detail. And luckily, we've been here quite a few times, so you've heard a lot of this. I want to start out, though, by giving you an idea of what our strategic layout is right now. And this is based on all of the work that we've done this year up to this was laid out about 3 months ago, and this is what we're using to execute forward, and it will be sort of the basis for how we lay out the rest of the presentation. You can see here in a true sort of strategic plan form, we have our sort of overall sort of vision statement, and then we have four areas of focus or strategic outcome areas. So this is really what we've seen from doing assessments of the state over these agency-by-agency risk assessments, as well as where we see the most intrusions or incidents, which I'm going to talk a little bit about later. We came up with these as being our four key priority areas. We need a risk-aligned program. We need to work on people because most of the intrusion points actually come through people clicking on things and doing things that are silly. And then we need to work on the IT infrastructure, and this is also where a good deal of efficiency can come in that, you know, we're kind of trying to secure things 84 different ways. If we can get to a little more commonality, we can find efficiencies. And then rapid detection, response, and recovery. And what we saw in the risk assessments over and over again is the first and last pillars, we did a baseline across really sort of well-known standards, and we found consistently that our lowest points were in incident response, identifying bad things in the environment, as well as risk management, sort of across the board. Every agency consistently pretty low spots. So we know these are key focus areas. So I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these really briefly. So from the risk management perspective, this is really a tale of the tape of work that we've done, mostly related to the executive order risk assessments. But what you can see here from start of the executive order, which is roughly the beginning of the annual period, we've doubled the number of systems that we're instrumenting looking for bad things, vulnerabilities. We've remediated thousands, 56,000 plus issues by doing this scanning and bringing light to this problem. We have gotten actually improvement out of those systems. But I would point out, you'll see this sort of this number, I've mentioned it here at committee before, criticals per host. Let's just think it's like really bad stuff on things that you scanned. And this is the worst of the worst. So there's actually a high that's below critical. So to be clear, this is stuff that is really bad. Though it looks like our average went up in the year, part of that's because we have more volume. And actually, the 3.5 number is slightly down from where we peaked, which was at about 3.66. So that's where you're starting to see those 56,000 vulnerabilities starting to turn the corner, and we're actually working on a downward slope. So as part of our goals going forward, obviously, we estimate there's about 70,000 devices we could scan. So we're about 80% through, and we want to finish that and get everything under scanning. This also gives us some of the foundational work that you have in any security program of being able to inventory our devices and software, which is sort of table stakes to start a program. And I think that helps some of the other IT initiatives. I know we've been working on that in previous bienniums. Down at this lower part, what you see is the actual tail of where we finished these agency-by-agency risk assessments. So what we did, we prioritized all the agencies in the executive branch by based on a survey. We prioritized them by risk. We targeted to get through the first 20 this biennium. We got them all started this biennium. We just didn't quite finish them. And by the end of the biennium, 14 of them will be completed. There's a few exit interviews that are next week, which means we hit about 65% of our goal. Within about, I'd say, plus about 6 weeks of the end of the biennium, we'll be done with those 20. And at that point, the rest of the agency scans are going to fold into a more regular risk management program where we're going to have a regular cadence for every agency so that we can do these assessments on a regular cadence and not like a hurry up, hair on fire, unplanned in the budget kind of way that we did this here. As part of those risk assessments, we did external application scanning, and we've been doing that agency by agency. And you can see here we've hit about two-thirds of the goal we had. In those 17 agencies we've looked at, though, we've already uncovered what we've kind of referred to as the Homer Simpson moments, 13 really big, just like left the door open, we should have known better type of situations, one of them being, which I'll talk about in a little bit, a major incident we had with one of the agencies that had been, we saw intrusion activity going back for 8-9 years. And our scanning finally found this instead of somebody coming and telling us, hey, by the way, we're playing around in your stuff. So it's a pretty big turning point for us. Rough estimate of the apps, and we didn't do an exact count, but the rough estimate is well over 400 applications we've already scanned. So that's a pretty good swath of the external security posture of the executive branch. So let me move forward here. So in our open and empowered culture of security, we've worked very heavily, again, part of the executive order, on security awareness training. So we actually split that, awareness being I'm aware of issues and I know who to call, and training of specific skills like don't click on that email or things like that. We are releasing on a quarterly basis, and we started in April releasing quarterly packages of awareness videos, short videos. We actually have a link here, but I don't think there's time to show you what that video looks like. But they're very short, produced videos that we purchased that can be watched from anywhere. You don't even have to be logged into a system to keep security issues, even ones that are helpful at home, in front of all employees in the executive branch. On the training, we are refreshing the training for all employees, and that's actually we finished it. We've built the training. It's actually going to be deployed next week with a goal to finish well over 80% by the end of next quarter. So we actually spilled over a little bit in the objectives there. In addition to baseline training, my team personally has finished about 3 weeks of full time of training, or 120 hours of training per employee on my team. And that's targeted training to build the expertise that we've talked about for that centralized group, as well as we've funded and organized very targeted expert training, the SANS critical controls, which is it's a sort of an expert level training for IT professionals that are doing IT every day. And that class actually happens next week on site. We have 75 folks from across the executive branch, including a good deal of folks from the data center, attending this course. With that, I will move to some of our big projects, just to give an idea that we weren't just working on the executive order. We had lots of other projects going on. We worked on this first to the left. These are the ones that had major dollar values, so this is not everything we worked on. Well, we worked on event monitoring, which is a way that we actually look at the bad things. I mentioned that detection being a low spot for the state. This is instrumentation that looks at everything going through the system and looks for bad stuff. throws alerts up that my team can then go and follow up on. So we've installed that and instrumented that. A lot of room to go on it, but it actually got stood up this year. We also did a ton of work on restructuring the way our network is laid out, and we actually set it up, instead of being flat and everybody together, we actually have three major segments that splits our public safety, our health, and then everyone else into three separate segments with separate firewalls and intrusion capabilities, so that they're it kind of gives us a little bit more layered approach.
Can I stop you for just a second?
Yes, sir.
So I don't want you to tell me anything that you don't want to tell me in open session, but are you able to know who's been attempting intrusions?
Chair Riley, members of the committee, it's a good question, but unfortunately, attribution is one of the most difficult things to do in security. Mm-hmm. So people usually will bounce through someone else's location to attack you. So where I could tell where the link came in from, it doesn't necessarily mean that's who's attacking us.
Okay.
We have stuff coming from all over the place.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, there have been some instances where we've been able to ascertain an individual actor. And we've turned that, and where we have done that, we've turned that over to law enforcement for follow-up.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, we've worked partnership. We have a really close partnership with the cybercrime folks in Portland for the FBI, and we regularly meet with them and kind of do threat briefings, and we've got follow-up on this particular individual. So,
thank you.
Yes. So the other some other work that we did, life cycle replacement, which was a finding in the Secretary of State audits we talked about last year, which is a good deal of replacing old gear that was out of support and refreshing gear that was part of a sustainability package that was from previous bienniums. We also worked a lot on audit findings, not just the Secretary of State, but we also have many compliance regimes that we have to comply to in the data center. And the compliance requirements move up every year, roughly. So a lot of this is not necessarily like we were missing. It's the requirements were raised and we had to catch up. So we've spent a good deal on that. The biggest project being one of the ones that we've done at the data center is a big refresh of privileged access. So the people that have the most critical access and can do the most damage, if they were to be compromised, they could do the most damage to our networks. We've actually separated out the stuff they do every day from the stuff they do when they're actually managing systems. It's a major re-architecture of how we deal with privileged access in the data center. And then finally, as it says DR here, that stands for disaster recovery. We worked on the security components of getting our Montana disaster recovery site fully enabled such that it is completely hot. And I think now we have all capabilities. We have our mainframe capabilities. We have Windows capabilities, Linux capabilities. We have kind of all of our types of systems capable there. And now we need to start working with agencies about moving their workloads there and setting up their actual recovery objectives. So we've done the infrastructure. A little bit about incidents, and I think we've shown these clouds here before. I've only marked the new ones, and since 1538 did talk about reporting incidents, these are the ones that were big enough that they either had a breach component or a clear intrusion. And they were confirmed rather than we saw sort of some rattling around or some anomalous logs, but they didn't actually make it fully to an intrusion. We've had three large ones, the Contractors Construction Board, Fish and Wildlife, which was actually an application that was at a vendor, which pointed out a key governance problem we have that we're going to work on, that we need to govern our suppliers because it was actually they built the app, they maintained the app. So it's actually a flaw at the provider, not at Fish and Wildlife. And then the reason marked in green, DEQ, this is the intrusion I mentioned where we saw folks moving around their network for or on a particular system for well over 8 years. But the reason I put that in green is that's the first major incident we've had where it was one we found and we proactively went after versus CCB and ODFW, we both found out from an actor outside of the state. So we're finally turning the corner to the place where we're going to start detecting things on our own. And from our own efforts of walking the perimeter, our own efforts of monitoring, we're actually catching our own stuff now. I don't think that this will be the last that we see of these, especially given our walking of the perimeter. The number that said 13 literally went up to just 2 days ago. So with this walking the perimeter, we continue to find bad things. You go looking for the bad stuff, you find it. So did you want to add anything? Yes.
Just that the this is representative of the incidents. This is not representative of the vulnerabilities that we found.
Yes. I wanted to give a couple of very quick, and I know I'm at the end of my time. I just wanted to show that we do have, in light of Senate Bill 90 now being passed from both the Senate and the House, thank you for your support. I wanted to let you all know some idea of what that looks like going forward. So I, as of yesterday, actually took the existing Enterprise Security Office and flattened all, I took all leadership positions and flattened so that we could start to build a new organization. And I laid out this org structure and moved my folks into this org structure, which roughly aligns to, you see where it says Deputy CISO, that's really agency enablement and all things solutions. So making sure we catch up on the technology that we have and make sure that we absolutely do not leave a single agency in the executive branch behind in the process of transitioning to a new enterprise model. Security services is where we are going to build out services that we provide centrally as an enterprise, so where we get those efficiencies of doing an enterprise model. Security Operations Center I've had all along, but that will become expanded, and that's where our vulnerability management has moved, because the finding of the vulnerabilities matched up with what we see as alerts is a natural matching of knowing whether what we saw as an alert is actually something we're vulnerable to, or whether it's just somebody trying a lock and they're never going to get in. And then finally, governance, risk, and compliance. And with our work with the governor's office, we know that governance is one of the key things, especially going to an enterprise model, that absolutely has to be built out, as well as risk, which you saw as a pillar of our strategy. So, and roughly what this looks like in the rest of this calendar year, we continue the programs we already have underway, risk, vulnerability management, training. But you see that enterprise security operation, that's through the end of the year, focusing on that transition. And what are those folks that are part of Senate Bill 90, how do they integrate into the new organization, and how do we make sure we don't leave the agencies behind in moving to a new model? And then I see three big things coming up within the biennium, governance being one of the top ones. These are in roughly priority order. Application security, because that's where we see most of our breaches, and incident response, because it was clearly indicated in all of our risk assessments across the enterprise. So with that, that's kind of roughly where we've been. There's a ton of stuff in our written testimony about details of breaches and a lot more prose around this, but with that, I'd take any questions you might have.
So, one second. Application security, a lot of that has to do with keeping up to date.
Yes, sir.
So that's something that you're really working on, I assume, is getting all the agencies to keep their applications up to date.
Yes, Chair Riley, members of the committee. What we're looking to do is build better ability to instrument, as you've seen, the sort of walk in the perimeter. We've got folks basically just probing apps. We need to build better capability of being able to find those things more proactively, but then and have resources to help develop fixes. But in addition to that, we're also working on strategies for where ways we can isolate things that we can't update now so that they present less risk to the rest of the enterprise.
So specifically, we speak to the 2003.
Thanks. We're recently, an example is Server 2003. We have a number of these instances. They're on extended support. And they're well out of mainstream support, and they present a risk to the agents, to the enterprise environment. We're building a separate segment to move all of these to. We're taking them off their domain, off the domain, so effectively their connections become very, very limited to just what those applications do.
Okay.
So their threat to our networks are limited to what that application does and nothing else.
Great. Senator Boer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Pettit, PERS is one of my real concerns because so many people depend on those checks. Are you overseeing PERS and their emergency plan? And
Chair Riley, Senator DeBoer, thank you for the question. Yes, we are.
Good,
we're overseeing them.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, next up we have the Oregon Judicial Department. Bryant Baer and David Stauffer. Gentlemen, if you could remember to introduce yourself before you begin presenting.
Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Barron, the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon Judicial Branch. With me today is OJD's Chief Information Security Officer, David Stauffer. I would like to start with a brief message regarding information security. OJD's presentation is rather generic as it relates to the inner workings of the branch's information security practices and procedures and our posture. We are being generic because of the public forum and our presentation being posted online. In private meetings with the Legislative Fiscal Office, we do discuss in greater detail OJD's information security stance, audit reports, and specific action steps. We understand the need for you to absorb the information and see the information. I just wanted to assure you that when we're in more closed doors, we get into greater detail. No system is 100% secure. I'll strive to provide as much information as I can, just knowing we are on live and it's public. So. Very briefly, OJD is the separate branch of government, is our mission statement, just to call that out. Access, trust, confidence, dispute resolution, partnerships, and administration. From our structure, 179 independently elected officials located throughout the state. The Chief Justice is the administrative head of the branch, guided along with the State Court Administrator Kingsley Click. 27 judicial districts, 36 counties. I bring this slide out just to give you the breadth of what we have statewide. 27 judicial districts, 36 counties, but we also operate in 78 different sites throughout the states, whether it's in-custody arraignments that occur at the local level to the statewide, say for like Multnomah, the entire county, and just to give you an idea of our footprint out there. From an organizational structure, again, Chief Justice, State Court Administrator, I'm the Chief Information Officer of the Enterprise Technology Services Division. The Information Security Office is in my division to make sure that our systems are secure. And then our Information Security Office, while rather small, has a lot of acronyms to it. Many four and five letter acronyms there. I won't get into them all. I will just say the continued training required to maintain the credentials has been completed, which is very important. People get acronyms and then they let it go or they get distracted. We invest heavily to make sure that our team here is up to date and current on their credentials. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Stauffer.
Good afternoon, Chairman Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Stauffer. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for the Oregon Judicial Department. As you can see here, we have a number of policies and standards. These are our lifeblood. These are the ones that make our organization go. Policies are basically management's directive on what we need to do to keep our systems and people safe. Standards are the technical resources. Now, we have a number of them, like access control, which might be you have to have a password to authenticate into our system. What does that password need to look like? How long does it have to be? How complex does it have to be? We have things like incident response, which could be anything from a data breach to a lost laptop to a stolen laptop, because we've had those happen too. And then we have things like mobile device security. We don't normally allow you to bring your own personal device and connect it to our network, unless if there's some cases that we do allow that. And if we do, you have to do certain steps before we allow that to own. Otherwise, you're using an OJD equipment that we can control.
I would say that Mr. Stauffer is very popular when he talks about length of password and complexity of password with folks.
Yes, my name is definitely mud right now. From a security tool standpoint, this is a list of what we have. Now, we have everything from firewalls where we control ingress and egress. And so we control who's coming in, who's going out, what applications come in, because we get in the neighborhood of 13.5 million people trying to hit our network every hour a day. So we can kind of control that. Then we have malicious code, which is antivirus that we keep up. We have spam and spyware protection, which is what's listed. We use encryption, which is RSA, two-factor to get in. Like, we have CJIS requirements. We have people that have LEDS access. They have to have two-factor to get into that type because that's very confidential information. Mm-hmm. We also have monitoring of our systems using QRadar. We have a Nessus scanner where we can do our own vulnerability scans. And then we do yearly training of our employees. That's mandatory. They have to go through that. Our office also puts out a two-hour presentation that we go to court where we have more in person. That way they get a little more in-depth training and they have the ability to ask questions, because usually there's all kinds of questions. Wow, I didn't know that. Oh, you mean they can do that? So it's really good that we get out. And that way I get FaceTime with the court staff too, so they don't feel so bad if they do have an incident where they lost their iPhone, they lost a laptop. They know they have to call me and report that. And if they know me a little better, they're more likely to do that instead of just, oh, I'll do it later. And then we instituted something about 4 years ago where we contract a third-party vendor to come in and do a vulnerability assessment of our networks. Now, this consists of them coming from the outside like they're a hacker and seeing what they can do. But they also, we give them authenticated access on the inside, so it's like they were already in, and see what they can find. And then we take that report that they give us and we put an action plan together to find all the critical components that they found and how we can go about fixing that. And we've definitely gone, the first year we did this, we had pages and pages of stuff, just like everybody else did. This last year, we were very light. We'll probably never get to the point that it's perfect. You just can't do that. But it's gotten a lot better since we've started this.
And for the committees, just so the committee knows, we do share the management reports of those with the Legislative Fiscal Office when those are completed, and discuss what our action plans are going forward. I can say that this scanning is very intrusive. When you hire a company to hack you, they try to hack you. And so it will disrupt you. So it also gave us an opportunity to discuss internally since 2003, how do we handle our business continuity? Because, you know, I mean, you can hack through a printer, you can hack through a server. And so this gave us has given us 4 years of opportunities to test our BCP and also to look for vulnerabilities internally and externally. I did want to bring out, I wrote here, OJT information security incidents. This is an incident that Sean is aware of. It happened in third quarter 2016. As Sean mentioned before us, sometimes people do things. They create a vulnerability. It's an attack vector. One person did and ended up infecting a court with a malware attack. And we were caught it very quickly. We were able to contain it at that court. It did not result in any data loss whatsoever. It disrupted the court for a couple of hours, but we were able to quickly contain it and resolve it. And so we, again, after we had a little bit of a handle on it, talked to Sean at the Legislative Fiscal Office, so he knew what was going on. And again, we incorporate those type of things into our training as well. The human dynamic, I mean, again, sitting in a dark cubicle in some foreign country, just sending your bots at a system is pretty easy to do. But engaging in the human component of it is really where some of the weaknesses are, and that's what folks like to do. So we did find out that all sometimes you have to do is ask people for their password, and they'll give it to you. And so we did have that brief attack. We were able to recover with it with no data loss. That is our brief presentation. Is there any questions, anything we can provide for you?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. Next up, we have the Legislative Administration. We have Brett Haynes, our Chief Information Officer. And Brett, if you could remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Absolutely. Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett Haynes, Chief Information Officer, Legislative Administration. Some of this you've heard in the last two presentations, so I'll try to be brief, but what I wanted to focus on are, what are some of the global threats that we're hearing about? What are some of the things that the FBI recommends in terms of countermeasures and what we adhere to? And then just some information on volume, the things that we see. You know, some companies will have trade secrets or proprietary information that they want to protect. It's not really what our area of focus is or what really concerns us the most. The things that we worry about are things like a denial of service attack. somebody brings down and floods our website, our oldest website, with bogus traffic to bring it down, then we can't share information with the public. Or phishing attempts and other malware to get in and disrupt our internal business. As you can see, the FBI recommends a number of things, from cybersecurity awareness training, which is, we have a cybersecurity awareness training in place. We're looking to expand that, but we had a class that we gave on the last professional development day. We have some online modules that cover everything from password protection or how to prevent, you know, giving in to a phishing attack. We have the antivirus, anti-exploit, anti-ransomware software. We make use of firewalls. We have disaster recovery in a limited scope right now. We're expanding based on last session's pop. And we do virtualize, just for an example. And we just completed our annual penetration and vulnerability testing with an outside vendor. Once we get the final results back, I'll be happy to share it at the, you know, post-session or sometime in July. Just to give everyone an idea, ransomware is one of the things that's really taken off, and I don't know if you saw some of the news stories from earlier this year, but government is certainly not immune to this. The Pennsylvania state legislature was hit with a ransomware attack, and an entire network was encrypted, and that prohibited both members and staff from getting onto that network and conducting business. So that is certainly an area of concern, and it's just growing by leaps and bounds. Just some statistics from some antivirus vendors out there. Ransomware is popular in the United States because we're more willing to pay. So if it works, they're going to keep doing it. Just in Q3 2016, Panda Labs discovered that there were 18 million new variants of malware. I mean, it's spreading, it's changing, and it's just becoming more and more of an issue. And just the general cost to business, they're estimating it's going to cost businesses $2.1 trillion by 2019 just to fight off and deal with cybercrime. You know, just some information on information traffic that the legislature has and the services that we provide to the public. Our oldest website since February 1st has had over 5 million hits. Granicus, which is our video streaming service, so all the floor sessions, all the committee meetings that we stream out, almost a million hits. Our Gov Delivery, Capital E Subscribe, 8.5 million. With over 600,000 people subscribers. Our Ola data service, 18.5 million requests for data. So we're getting a lot of information out there. So disruption of that would certainly be disruptive to the public and our ability to get information out. Since the beginning of session, email traffic coming in, 8.5 million emails have tried to work its way in. About 26% of that is legitimate email. The rest of it's spam and malware that we have been able to shield. There have been a couple of spams that get through and a phishing attempt, but by and large, we're able to stop all that with our software, with the use of the firewalls, and some of the other preventive measures that we put in place. Again, I wanted to keep it somewhat brief. There'll be a lot more follow-on when we have the final report from our vulnerability, and I can talk about any action plans that that come out of that. But barring any questions, that's all I had for you today.
Yes, sir, let me go.
Your OData usage there, those numbers look a little askew. 56 registered users, 18 million requests for data. That doesn't make sense.
All right. Chair Riley, Senator Linthicum, what this is a university or a news service or any particular individual will set up an automated data sharing. So you could set up a request, give me all information on all bills every single time they change. So one person can generate many, many requests, so any news service, et cetera. So it's a small number of subscribers, but a large amount of data.
And are those subscribers mostly university types, or do you have a breakdown across the spectrum what those users look like?
Yes, Senator, I can even provide that. But by and large, it's universities, news services, some other government agencies, and some members.
And I'm one of them, so.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, I would also mention Mr. Haynes does meet regularly with me, with the Legislative Fiscal Office, on IT matters generally, but certainly information security issues as well, very similar to Mr. Baer with Oregon Judicial Department.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, next up we have the Secretary of State. We're pleased to have the Deputy Secretary of State, Leslie Cummings, with us, along with Lisa Vasa, who serves as the Chief Information Security Officer for Secretary of State. Ladies, if you could please remember to introduce yourself for the record before you begin presenting.
Chair Riley and members of the committee, my name is Leslie Cummings, and I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Secretary of State's office, and I have with me today our Chief Security Officer, Lisa Vasa, who's going to be walking you through our security program report. Before we get started, I wanted to comment also, like our fellow agencies, that our presentation is fairly high level, and we do work to provide detail behind closed doors. Lisa?
For the record, I'm Lisa Vasa. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for Secretary of State. In security, we protect our systems and information as much as technology, knowledge, budget, and resource constraints allow. But hackers, unintentional human errors, physical events over which we have no control, and software vulnerabilities are some of the risks we face every day. Almost as important to what we do, protecting our assets and our information, is what we do to respond to suspicious events. As Secretary of State, our security program is moving toward the National Institute of Standards, NIST, Cybersecurity Framework core functions of identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover to address those needs. We also use the Center for Internet Security's 20 critical controls to prioritize our efforts. Secretary of State has 4 full-time security staff now. We cross-train and share most of our responsibilities, with each staff member having a core set of responsibilities. I focus on the policy, training, and governance activities, as well as being part of the statewide Information Security Risk Advisory Group, which is tasked with formulating policy and guidance for the future state risk management program. Also on our team is one person who focuses on network security and security architecture. The third member of our team is our application security lead, and the fourth provides data monitoring and analytics. An org chart is included in the package of materials we provided to the committee. Our information security strategic plan is based on ISO 27001 and 27002. The NIST cybersecurity framework will be the base for future plans while using ISO and other security standards as references. We have 30 specific tasks to complete for the 2017-2019 biennium. Most of the tasks on our list involve documenting or updating documentation for what we're already doing. Regular reviews of our policy standards and processes is a necessary part to ensure we are doing all we can to protect agency assets. I'll speak more to our agency-wide efforts in that respect a bit later. An executive summary and a table of contents for that security plan are included in our materials. The Secretary's security staff operates with an annual budget of $500,000. This includes staff salaries and training, plus our security systems. As the security budget is part of the overall information systems division budget, some administrative and infrastructure costs are not included in that figure. Our security systems include network firewalls, a web application firewall, web content filtering, antivirus software, and application vulnerability scanning, and a data collection and analytics system. We use the state's network vulnerability scanning, the Tenable Nessus system. We also use some open source tools for monitoring and data analytics, including a tool for network full packet capture. These tools provide multiple layers of defense, from protecting access to and from the network, to protections for our servers, databases, and applications, down to the workstation level. At the workstation level, we have personal firewalls installed, so an infection of one device does not spread to rest of the devices on the network. For the future, we have requested funding for security enhancements, including a network access control system, a web security gateway, and a network full packet capture. The network access control system would provide additional protection to the SOS network, while the web security gateway and network full packet capture system would replace existing systems with newer, more comprehensive solutions. In the past 12 months, SOS Security has implemented VPN for remote access, replacing our Citrix system. We have upgraded our network firewalls and content filtering, and we are in the process of upgrading our web application firewall and load balancing, which also provides denial of service protection. We also implemented our data collection and analytics system and continue to add data to that. This system is the workhorse of our continuous monitoring program. As I mentioned before, detecting suspicious events and responding quickly to potential incidents is a critical component of an information security program. This is an area in which the Secretary of State staff excels. This chart shows the millions of events from top sources of data, including networks, servers, databases, applications that come into our data analytics system monthly. We are approaching a billion events per month. This amount of information is overwhelming without the use of both human and machine intelligence. Each day, we work to create and refine our dashboards, alerts, and reports to filter out the millions of normal events and show us only the anomalies, the suspicious stuff. We then investigate that activity to block potentially malicious events, enhance preventative measures, and further refine our monitoring to be more effective in the future. We currently have 53 alerts and 109 dashboards using the information from our systems, and those numbers continue to grow as we bring more data in and find more ways to use it in an actionable way. We have created application containers within the system that allow other SOS staff to use the system for applications and development troubleshooting, as well as providing insight into all of our systems for IT infrastructure staff. This provides an opportunity for the staff to use all this data in an effective way and also partner with us to determine what is normal and what is not, effectively making them part of the security staff. One element of our continuous monitoring is the use of regularly scheduled and passive vulnerability scans for applications and devices on the network. The SOS security and help desk staff focus on vulnerabilities and patching has resulted in zero infections since September of 2015 that have required reimaging of the device. I'd also like to note that Stuart Martin of the SOS security team is a contributing member of the statewide Vulnerability Management Advisory Group. In addition to identifying vulnerabilities in unpatched systems, internal scanning allows us to identify what is on our network, with a particular emphasis on new or unauthorized devices. The Center for Internet Security has set a benchmark of 1 hour as a low-risk goal for identifying and removing devices that shouldn't be there. At SOS, we typically see and remove devices in less than an hour after they've been connected. In the future, budget permitting, we will be implementing network access control, which will prevent unauthorized devices from connecting at all. Along with our own internal vulnerability scanning, SOS contracted with a third party to perform an IT risk assessment in October 2016. The findings from the assessment have been added to our security plan of action and milestones and are being addressed. The executive summary for the assessment is included in the materials we provided. We are also planning to contract with a third party to conduct an assessment in fiscal year 2018. We complete PCI DSS self-assessments annually. When an incident does occur, SOS has formal processes and specific steps to take, depending on the incident type and the severity of that incident, to ensure that the problem is fully investigated, resolved, and appropriately reported. SOS has had only one security incident and one false positive since July of 2016. The false positive was documented as an incident and determined to be normal system behavior upon investigation into the root cause. The one actual security incident at SOS occurred in September of 2016 when three SOS users responded to a phishing email that had been sent to multiple state agencies. They responded by providing credentials or clicking on a link which took them to a malicious website. SOS ISD staff responded immediately, took appropriate action, validated that no information was compromised, and updated protections to prevent further issues of this kind. SOS has been working with the Enterprise Security Office to secure and deliver a formal security awareness training program. I volunteered to serve with a group that evaluated and selected the solution that is currently being implemented by the ESO. We will be using that system to provide and track staff's, security training. All staff will be required to complete formal training by the end of this year and annual training thereafter. While a formal program to ensure security training and awareness has not yet been established, we have taken informal steps to make sure that awareness and security training is provided to our agency. In October, I provided weekly messages to the agency during National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. I also send out a number of educational emails to SOS staff on security topics. The latest message I sent about password security is included in the materials we provided. We also provide notices of security-related webinars to appropriate staff and distribute the Department of Homeland Security Fed VTE Live training opportunities to encourage the development and improvement of security skills, not just for the security team, but for others in SOS as well. SOS aligns with the statewide information security standards, which the former SOS security officer helped to draft. We also have a number of internal policies and forms, a list of which is included in the materials. SOS has recently established a Policy, Standards, and Processes Committee. The committee is an advisory group of the SOS executive team charged with understanding agency business and technology, plans and operations, understanding what's required for successful implementation of agency policy standards and processes that support the agency's business, using that information to advise the SOS executive team. In addition, committee members will make decisions regarding policy standards and processes. This committee will be reviewing technology policies, standards, and processes and recommending changes as necessary to support and guide the technology initiatives of SOS, including the information security. This committee is another indicator of the commitment of the Secretary to information security. I'd like to close with just a couple charts that show some of the volume of potential attacks that we face each month. This first slide shows the attempts that were blocked by our web application firewall on our public-facing websites. This is the typical volume of attempts that we block each month. The actual traffic hitting our firewall is much higher than this, but these were the ones that were blocked by the top 10 types. This final slide shows our blocks of attempted attacks done by our firewall by the type of attack. As you can see, we're well over 300 million blocks each month. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about our Secretary of State security program. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Yes, Senator Linthicum.
On the second or the very last graphic you had, one of the items, the second to the last on the bottom, a domain found in a block list, is that propagated through machine intelligence, artificial intelligence, or is that propagated through a subscription-based method, or is that that blacklist populated by individuals within your? I realize it's probably all three, but I'm just wondering where the you've got almost. Well, it's hard to tell from 2,500 to 120. I have no idea where the middle line is there, but it's a big gap, and I'm wondering where those are where that population comes from.
Senator Linthicum, Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for that question. The answer is yes. Our firewall populates and is updated regularly with lists from the firewall provider. So machine intelligence, if you will, there. Plus, we also receive information from other sources, for example, the Department of Homeland Security or the National Association of Secretaries of State, the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center often send us lists of sites that we need to block or IP addresses that we need to block, and they are entered manually into the system.
So with that, the Secretary just recently announced that we had no security breaches in our election system. And I'm curious, I'm assuming the Homeland Security sent you their 600 IP addresses that they wanted you to scan for, and were you able to do that scan?
Yes, sir, Senator Riley, that is the case. We had added them to our block list. It was a little bit of a task because adding that many addresses manually is a little bit of a challenge. We did add those to our block list. We did look for information from those systems, but of course, after they were added to the block list, we didn't actually see them even trying to hit.
But you did a scan of previous hits?
We did not scan for them at the time. Our data analytics system was not in production, and so we were not collecting that information on a prior basis prior to getting it.
Okay.
We also received from the Department of Homeland Security, without going into too much detail, some of the indicators of compromise from the other states who had been hit, and we did search specifically for those indicators and found nothing.
Okay. So, but you weren't able to scan previous possible hits for those IP addresses?
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Chair Riley, members of the committee, next up we have the Oregon State Treasury. We have Chris Mullen, the Chief Information Officer, and Alan Bott. Alan, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your last name, but gentlemen, please introduce yourself for the record before you begin presenting.
Chair, if I need be excused.
Yes, fine.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Chris Mullen. I'm the IT Director with the Department of Treasury, or the Oregon State Treasury. I've been with them for 2 months, so bear with
me. Nice graphic, though.
You like that? with me, as Sean mentioned, is our agency CISO, Alan Bowie. I'm glad to be here to represent my agency and to participate in knowledge and experience sharing around the work our IT teams are doing within our security enclave. I'll briefly talk about our IT mission, and then we'll get into the security details. This chart covers our agency's mission and vision, but really highlights the reason security is one of our agency's biggest business drivers. The volume of transactions and billions of dollars this agency handles year after year creates a level of visibility and dictates not only a need to ensure security is a part of our foundation, but the need to understand at a higher level the specific security needs of a financial-driven business and the standards and practices along with that. Our job in this agency is to provide the necessary systems, some customized in-house, some COTS, and some cloud-based systems, network backbone, staffing skills, for the agency to conduct business successfully and in a secure and efficient way. We have three physical locations, two here in Salem, one at the L&I building, the other in the Capitol, and then one at our North office in Tigard. Our three general service areas we've talked about in our past JLCIMT briefings, so I won't spend any time on those. I'll just talk briefly about information security. Again, they do a wide range of activities to ensure industry standard cybersecurity protections for our systems, as well as ensuring equal or greater protections from our third-party providers. And you'll hear Alan speak at length about the number of audits and assessments that we have done every year. Our division provides IT services across the agency and works very closely with other state agencies and local governments on some of our interfaces. We provide specialized systems for business units and treasury customers, as well as consulting services to ensure effective use of our IT systems across the agency. This slide shows many of the major systems or services currently used to support the treasury operations. Real quick on the org chart, those three areas I mentioned before are each have a dedicated manager. We have a dedicated InfoSec team led again by, as I said, the CISO to ensure the cybersecurity safeguards are compliant and also exceed or meet the financial industry standards. This also includes some of the POPs from our budget ask to get some additional staffing in the security team. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan real quick on his background. He's been with the agency for 3 years, almost 3 years. Came to us from Adventist Health Systems, again, with the acronyms, lots of acronyms. He's got a CISSP, the Certified Information Systems Security Professional, Certified Information Security Manager. As I mentioned, I've worked with Alan for about 2 months. I've been with this agency for about 2 months, and I've been blown away by the level of effort and the work that this team is doing. So if there are no questions for me, I'll turn it over to Alan.
Thank you, Senator Riley, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today on this important topic. My name is Alan Bweet. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for Oregon State Treasury. I want to take a moment just to thank the committee for taking the time to discuss information security. This is a testament to the importance that each of you place on information security and the understanding that this topic impacts us publicly and privately. So jumping into our information security program, OSD's information security program is built on a solid foundation. The foundation is made up of a recognized security framework, people, process, and technology, as well as controls, security controls, administrative, physical, and technical. We use the framework to inform risk decisions and risk awareness, reduce complexity, and increase cost effectiveness, reduce information security incidents, improve integration of information security in the organization, enhance support for innovation and competitiveness, and just not to miss anything. So moving on to governance. At OST, we've implemented an information security governance process to provide assurance that information security strategies are aligned with and support agency business objectives, consistent with applicable laws, regulations through adherence of policy and control. Our governance model takes into account both internal and external factors, as shown in the slide above. A little bit about the Information Security Organization. While Treasury has always had a focus on IT security, the resources were spread across multiple positions across the agency. As the agency has grown and matured, agency leadership proactively realized that they needed dedicated resources to tackle an ever-growing and sophisticated cybersecurity threats. In 2013, with your help, Treasury requested and received approval for dedicated resources to manage information security, the CISO and the security architecture position. Upon evaluation of the program, I realized right away that OST needed additional security help. The resources in yellow were taken from other parts of the organization to supplement the information security team. To keep pace with information security risks, sophisticated cybersecurity attacks, and financial industry security trends, we need to continue to invest in information security resources and are requesting two additional staff in this year's budget. So, the resources will be put to good use as we seek to mature our information security program. InfoSec, information security, is continuing to build on its established security functional areas, the blue boxes. It may be a little bit hard to see, but that's security engineering, security operations, incident response, and program management. The items in red are areas OST has chosen to focus on and improve. Those areas will be the target for the 2017-2019 biennium. So the information security program does not exist in a vacuum or drummed up by a middle-aged security professional. Here are a few of the factors that actively impact and drive OST's information security program. As mentioned before, Treasury has always been security-minded and has been a driver for information security in the state state of Oregon. Some of you may remember that Treasury established the first secure VPN solution to transmit data safely between Treasury and its sister agencies. In 2013, the information security was formally consolidated under dedicated resources with your help. I've listed the key events that have happened since then. I couldn't possibly list all of them. Let's take a little closer look at the activities of the past year. I think the important thing to highlight in this slide is the fact that Treasury has always placed great importance on independent, third-party driven security assessments. It's given Treasury an independent lens with which to look at ourselves in relation to the financial industry. As we gauge ourselves in the financial industry, we are still in the infancy of our security program journey. So here are some key investments that we've made over the past year. These technologies and associated processes provide Treasury with proactive threat and detection capabilities and the ability to go back in time and identify what happened. All the assessments, evaluations, reviews, and external drivers we continuously gather gives us many data points we can use to guide and prioritize our program activities. This ensures we spend the dollars we are given in the most effective, efficient manner. For 2017-19 biennium, we'll be focusing on six primary areas. Each of these objectives have been chosen because they align with OST's strategic business objectives and address identified risks to the organization. So the areas are mature information security governance and asset management processes. Next slide. System resilience improvements and identity and access management program. Data security and business continuity and disaster recovery. In order to maintain and improve OST's information security competencies, Treasury has invested significant resources in staff training. both general security and industry-specific security knowledge. We attend annually the FSISAC security summits. FSISAC is the Financial Services Information Sharing and Analysis Center, a nonprofit financial industry community. Here you can see some general timelines on when we expect to start to execute on our plan. My apologies for putting the tech speak on the slide. The APT stands for Advanced Persistent Threat. I didn't have time to change the slides before. So in summary, here are the activities OSD plans to execute on over the next 2 years. With that, we are at the conclusion of the presentation. I'm available for any questions that you might have.
So I was given a tour a while back, and I appreciated that. It was very informative. I noticed you've added a couple of things, packet content capture. That must take a lot of memory space.
Yes, there's several terabytes of data.
Yeah, so, and it continues to grow, I assume.
Yes.
I'm not going to ask you any other deeper questions about that, but thank you. Thank you very much.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, and last up, we have the Department of Justice. We have Lauren King, who serves as DOJ's Chief Information Officer. And Lauren, if you could remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Sean. Good afternoon, members of the committee, co-chair Riley. My name is Lauren King. I am the chief information officer for the Oregon Department of Justice, and I'm flying solo today because my information security officer is off enjoying some family time at a softball tournament, so great weather for that. So I will just go ahead and get us right through the presentation, hopefully ending a little bit early. That's always my goal. So with the Oregon Department of Justice, our data governance is really at the highest level within the federal government. We do follow the NIST framework that you've heard a couple of other presenters here today talk about. But because we have federal tax information, criminal justice information, in fact, we have information from every state agency within Oregon. So you can imagine the level of confidential information that we do have because we are the state's lawyers. So we work with the IRS with under their regulations for data governance and protection, with the FBI for the criminal justice information, as well as the Department of Health and Human Services for the child support program and the regulations around their data. Of course, we have also the Oregon Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act passed many years ago that also really started us down the road of the information security program that we have today at DOJ. We also are governed at the highest level of the DOJ organization. It starts at the top with the Attorney General and the executive team for the department, all of the chief counsels for all of the legal divisions, as well as the Administrative Services Division Manager, which is my manager, Mark Williams, and the Information Services section falls within that section. Here's just a quick organizational chart of the Information Services section, makeup of the staff we have. We do have a dedicated Information Security Officer, and the rest of the team obviously has different pieces of responsibilities around network security, information security awareness, and other things. The information security staff, as I mentioned, we have one dedicated information security officer, and the rest of us are really focusing on the technology support and solutions and building those and maintaining those and managing those in a secure way. Here is a lovely list, and you can crack out your magnifying glasses. This is the list of our policies and procedures. This really is our information security manual. These are, again, based on the NIST security control families. And range everything from human and physical security to technology solution securities and so on and so forth. I wanted to give you an idea of the investment that DOJ has made in information technology and very specifically information security. This is our DOJ budget. Information services is only 2% of the overall DOJ budget, and our information security budget is less than that. We are really looking at about 22% of the information services section budget. So you get a lot of bang for the buck, but there's always room to invest more. Now we'll get into what I like to call our strategy for information security. It's summed up in three words, and that is defense in depth. This slide shows how we really start at the very outer perimeter with governance, with the procedures, training people, awareness about the threats that are out there and how to protect against them. Then we have physical security around our buildings. We have key cards. We have screen guards so people can't peer in through windows and look at computer screens. We have our receptionist behind glass. We issue check-in, check-out logs and visitor badges and so forth. We have third-party assessments. We use multiple third parties to do penetration testing, vulnerability and assessment testing, those types of things. We've actually had them come in and do physical testing. So dress up like your, HVAC guy, make up a phony badge, try to get into the building and see how far you can get. We also do employ the perimeter securities, your standard firewalls, IDS and IPS, so trying to really get at those people trying to get in and prevent loss of data and so forth using technology tools. We have multi-factor authentication, so that is not two unique identifiers, but three unique identifiers that each user must have in order to get onto our network. We have deployed this for every user in DOJ, not just elevated accounts, but regular user accounts. So to get in our front door, you must have three pieces of ID. We have internal security, so we have our information security officer and other team members constantly watching the logs. We have the antivirus. We do internal scanning of our own networks and information systems. We have encrypted our data at rest. We encrypt it across all lines, so we have heavy encryption. And all of these layers you have to get through to finally get at all agencies' data, so not only the DOJ data, but the data that we have that represents the agencies that we represent as their lawyers. So back in the 05-07 biennium, when the Consumer Identity Theft Protection Act was passed, that's when we hired our information security officer and it started implementing our information security program. A couple of other key items is we backed up our data. Our data backup was encrypted. We have implemented some email security alerts, intrusion detection and prevention. We started managing mobile devices very tightly, and privileged account management. So even back then, we implemented a higher level of authentication to use as privileged accounts like network administrators and so forth, super users that could really get into some of those systems. We required their access to be elevated. The next biennium, we continued working on the information security plan. That's when we implemented our end-to-end network encryption and, again, more security awareness, just making our staff and others aware of information security, hacking attempts, and ways to prevent that. In the 09-11 biennium, we implemented full disk encryption with in-house vulnerability and compliance scanning. The 11-13 biennium, our domain file server and exchange security monitoring, encrypted email and data loss prevention. So we implemented a tool for monitoring that email and encrypting email if it goes out so it reads our emails. And if it detects what it believes to be a social security number, for example, contained in the email, it will automatically encrypt that email. And we also implemented an encrypted file sharing system, so not just a secure file transfer protocol server, but an actual application that allows us to share documents securely without outside entities. A few other things that we've now implemented in the 13-15 biennium, the NIST security plan. So we've really started drilling down into all of the NIST security controls and building specific plans and our manual and our program around those controls. We have a network access control, so that prevents unauthorized devices from connecting to the network. And we engage third-party assessment vendors to come in and do those assessments. In the 15-17 biennium, that's when we rolled out the multi-factor authentication. And I think you heard from the OJD presenters that maybe not all their users are happy about doing a multi-factor authentication, but they will get over it, and they will come to appreciate the value that there is in that. A couple of other things is we pushed all of our information security training, or not all of it, but a lot of it out to iLearn, so it's easily accessible by many folks. And it can also track folks actually taking that training, and we make it a requirement that they take several trainings, several required trainings annually, so we can track who is receiving that training. We also implemented the short videos that I heard you, ESO, speak about, very high-quality produced, professionally produced videos that are very short and to the point that our folks can access at any time to just keep them reminded of the tips and tricks of how to keep one safe at work and at home. Of course, about a year ago was Senate Bill 1538 that requires us to report here, and we do so gladly, and obviously would more than enjoy giving you all of the details that are absent these slides behind closed doors, because that information is pretty confidential. Going into the next biennium, of course, we want to continue our road to maturity. We want to do a life cycle refresh that we have put in a policy option package for, and so that will refresh a lot of the hardware and upgrade some of those systems, because that truly is a key piece to information security, is keeping your systems, your hardware, and those technologies up to date and current. I just wanted to talk a little bit about those third-party assessors. We hired Info at Risk, another vendor that I do believe the Enterprise Security Office is using. They're a very well-known professional organization that does a great job. The Oregon Secretary of State's office obviously does their audits and came around and did some assessments for us. The Federal Department of Homeland Security, we have engaged with them. They have some free services available to governments where they do a cyber hygiene, so they do regular scanning of your public-facing networks and then provide you weekly reports so you can see what's going on a regular basis. We will also be engaging with them for penetration testing, some physical testing, and so forth later on in this year. Again, those services are free, so the only investment you really have is your own staff time and so forth to engage in those services. And then CSG Government Solutions, they are a quality assurance vendor working on the child support project, and we've engaged them, and they have done a physical assessment as well as penetration testing of the system being developed, which is a critical piece to a very large project, is doing the early assessment and the early information security penetration and vulnerability assessment, so you're building the foundation of the system and the architecture in a secure manner rather than waiting until it's implemented and doing your scanning and your assessment then and discovering that you've got some security holes.
Can I stop you for a second? The Homeland Security piece, can you expand on that just a little bit on what they provide?
Sure. I've got it written down here. I'm sorry I don't have it on the slide. They have a group called the National Cybersecurity Assessments and Technical Services Group, so NCATS, and they provide the cyber hygiene, which is they just regularly scan your publicly facing networks and they'll send you weekly reports. They provide risk and vulnerability assessments, which has several pieces to it. It can include penetration testing, so they can come inside and do internal penetration testing as if they're working for you or an insider. They can also do it as an external actor. They do phishing exercises, so try to trick your people into clicking on a link in an email, for example. They will do database and operating system assessments. So they really have a laundry list of services that are all provided at no cost to the agency. They simply ask you to enter into a letter of engagement, if you will, so rules of engagement. It's very professional, it's very organized, and they have been very, very responsive to our requests. So you don't have to get in line and wait 3 years for this. You can get in, and their queue is backed up about 6 months is all. So
thank you.
You're welcome. And in closing, we've had zero information security incidents at the Department of Justice because of our defense in depth strategy, that layered onion that you saw a couple of slides ago. Information security is at the core of DOJ, and it does wrap around everything we do because, as the state's lawyers, we have all states' data and we must protect it at all cost. The information security governance also being at the highest level of the organization, so we have the buy-in of the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, and the Chief Counsels. And information security continuous improvement is really built into the core values of what we do, and we do make an investment in it. And a final statement that I have to make that I think was alluded to with one previous presenter. But that is, with the increasing complexity and sophistication of cyber attacks, coupled with people, employees, they're just humans, but they do have access to the secure data because that's what they need to do their jobs. It really is no longer a question of if, but when a data breach is going to occur. Implementing all of these security protocols, tools, procedures, and programs simply delays and pushes out the when. Hopefully the when will never come, but we must be prepared for the when. And so potentially being prepared for that inevitable may quite possibly be the best protection of all, is being prepared for the when. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, hopefully it didn't go unnoticed. The reason we had six individual organizations presenting on information security, Senate Bill 1538 really recognized that there is no single authority for all branches. There is no single notification requirement for all branches. And so we do have, at this point, at least six independent entities that have been and are getting better at coordinating with one another. I think you saw some lack of uniformity in terms of the presentations today. That's to be expected. I think over time you'll see kind of a normalization of detail. Certainly all the entities that came before you today have been working appropriately with the Legislative Fiscal Office and certainly in the executive branch. The agencies have been working closely with the Office of the State CIO. So we fully expect that to continue and appreciate their good work and increasing levels of coordination and communication with our office.
So I personally like the different styles and different levels of presentation. It represents to me the way that the agencies think. Okay. And I think that's a good thing for us to know. So I really appreciate everybody doing what they think is the appropriate level. So
great.
With that, that
concludes our agenda for today. And at this point, I don't expect we'll have another JLCMT meeting this session. So it's been a pleasure to work with all of you, and look forward to that continuing during the interim.
So I'm not going to go quite so far as to say we're not going to have another meeting this session.
Okay.
But I am going to adjourn this session. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
This session. Thank you all very much.
Great.